Turn to Genesis chapter 10. Genesis chapter 10, and we are going to do our best to get through two chapters tonight. So this really is going to be an overview. But it's kind of crazy because here we are in Genesis chapter 10, and we are looking at, in just these 10 chapters, this is about 2,000 years that has passed. So we've got 2,000 years that have gone by, and now for the next 2,000 or 3,000 years, we're going to see, you know, that's the whole rest of the Bible. So this was 2,000, and this is the rest, the time up to now. So, you know, we're definitely going to slow down and begin to take more of that that magnifying look at the people and how God uses them and all those other good things. So, but what we have before us tonight, Genesis chapter 10. In the Genesis record, Henry Morris, and I'm just telling you, the Genesis record is a great book. If you want to really go into depth into the book of Genesis, the Genesis record by Henry Morris is not just a commentary, it's a scientific commentary. So there's everything from math to all that other good stuff in there. You know, and you could tell I'm not a math guy, so I need him to be able to help me out with those things. But he states that Dr. William F. Albright, who is universally acknowledged as the world's leading authority on the archaeology of the Near East, though himself not a believer in the infallibility of Scripture, says concerning this table of nations that we see here that it stands absolutely alone in ancient literature, without a remote parallel even among the Greeks, where we find the closest approach to a distribution of peoples in a genealogical framework. The Table of Nations remains an astonishingly accurate document. So even if you discount what we see as like the quote-unquote religious aspects of it, this that you see before you, this Genesis chapter 10, is considered to be one of the most accurate and finest works of ancient literature. It is believed that the only thing that antedates it is some writings that have been found in Babylon and Mesopotamia and some of those other ancient cities that they believe, you know, even what the Bible already tells us and we know, and they say, yes, it is the cradle of civilization, and we're like, duh, right? We knew that. So God keeps people, no matter who they are, no matter what they say they know, He keeps people coming back to this book. And it's an amazing thing as we get through it. So if you would, look at verse 1 with me. Genesis chapter 10, verse 1. These are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So sons were born to them after the flood. So the sons that it's talking about of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and we know in like three other places in Genesis, it gives them in exactly that order. But yet when he starts talking about the order, it's done in a different order. It's done in the order of Japheth first, and then Ham, and then Shem. And most people believe that it's written like that because they believe that Shem wrote this before he passed it off to somebody else that we're going to see at the end. So Shem is sitting there probably during the dispersion, which we're going to see in chapter 11, and he's writing about all these peoples that he's seen, all these branches of nations that broke off, and we're going to look at just a few of them tonight. There's no way that we could even get through half of this chapter if we went into detail on each one of these nationalities. We're going to try and get through 70 of them in about 30 minutes here. Okay, so let's break into it. Let's look at verses 2 through 5, all right? And if anybody thinks that you can pronounce these better than me, you let me know, because, man. all right, so we go into the sons of Japheth. Japheth was the oldest, okay? Gomer, that's what they were originally going to name Christian, was Gomer. But they Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, or Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tiras, the sons of Gomer. So, you know, those are the sons of Japheth, and now we look at the sons of Gomer. Gomer was Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah. The sons of Javan were Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. From these, the coastland peoples spread in their lands, each with his own language, by their clans and their nations. Now, mind you, these nations that we're looking at, this happens after the dispersion that we're going to see in chapter 11. So even though he's basically giving you the post before he gives you the pre, right? This is where some of the modern-day directors get that, where they start in the past, you know, at the beginning, and then go into the future in the end, you know, and just kind of he's showing you the end before the beginning. And most scholars see these, what I'm about to tell you is done not just from a biblical perspective, but also from an academic perspective. The name of Japheth himself is found in literature as Iapetos, the legendary father of the Greeks, and Iapeti, which is the reputed ancestor of the Aryans in India. So you have two people groups, and these are non-biblical, understand. These are two people groups that claim that Japheth is the founder of their nations. Okay? The first son, Gomer, is generally identified by Herodotus, Plutarch, and other ancient writers with Samaria, which is just north of the Black Sea. So as these guys, you know, and we're going to see this in the end, as these guys are branching out, I'm just giving you a few of the names that are in here and where these nationalities came from. The Jews identified Ashkenaz with Germany. And to this day, Jews from Germany are called Ashkenazi. Isn't that crazy? And you know, just remembering how ancient this writing is, more than likely when Shem wrote this, because the original Hebrew language was pictographs, just like we see in Egypt and things like that. And Togarmah, he was the originator of the Armenians. Even Armenian tradition to this day says that Togarmah was their founder. He was what began their nationality. It's how they started. Josephus says that Magog, or Gog, was the ancestor of the Scythians, originally inhabited the Black Sea area as well. Magog is commonly associated with two other sons of Japheth, which was Meshach and Tubal. And you can see that especially in Ezekiel 38:2. Meshach is preserved in the name Muscovy, the former name of Russia and Moscow. Tubal is known in the Assyrian monuments as Tiberini, and probably has been preserved in modern Russian city of Tobolsk. So you have Magog, Meshach, and Tubal, and they are the progenitors of the Russian people. I know, I'm a history nerd, right? So I hear this, and I'm just like, this is so cute. You guys, you know, I know it tickles me, man. Like, some of the things that I enjoyed the most when I was in the Navy was like when we would go to, I've walked at Stonehenge. I've touched the stones at Stonehenge. To me, that was one of the most amazing things I've ever done. I've been to Palma Mallorca, Spain, and been to the Cliffside Hotel there, which is like hundreds of years old. I've been to the city that was destroyed by Mount Vesuvius, and for some reason is escaping my mind right now. Huh? Pompeii, yeah, that one. I've walked those streets. I've done those things. So this is your connection with the fact that what you believe, what we understand, is completely grounded in reality. That's why I'm such a history nerd. Because this is real. Okay, so let's keep going. The name Javan is the original form of Iona, which was the same as Greece. The word is translated Javan or Javan in some Old Testament passages and Greece in others. Japheth and his son Javan are considered to be the progenitors of the Greeks. So basically, Japheth and Javan moved to that Mediterranean area that was Greece and founded the Greek nation. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I know you're like, yeah, whatever, dude. I've already forgotten. There's too many names coming at me. But, you know, these. So Europe and everything is already kind of filling up. and parts of Asia and India. This is happening. Look at verse 6. The sons of Cush, or the sons of Ham, Cush, Egypt. Now, some of your translations may say Mizraim. So the sons, but mine says Egypt, because that is exactly how it translates. The same word in the Hebrew here is Egypt. So it reads the sons of Ham, Cush, Egypt. Son's name is Egypt. You can kind of guess where he found it and what he did. Put Canaan. The sons of Cush, go ahead and let's read verse 7. The sons of Cush, Seba, Havilah, Sabata, Rama, and Sabteca. The sons of Rama, Sheba, and Dedan. Okay, so stop right there. So as we were talking about Egypt, Mizraim, same word. It's the customary name for Egypt in the Bible. Egypt in Psalm 105:23 is called the land of Ham. So most people teach, and the Jewish Targums teach, that Ham and his son Egypt went to the Nile Valley and founded. No, yeah, you're right. It is Egypt. Okay, it would just not make sense if it wasn't, right? Be like, yeah, I was trick questioning Michael earlier. That was fun. Put is, or foot, or however you might pronounce it in Aramaic, is the same as Libya. Okay? Canaan is, of course, the Canaanites, and they're all over the place. They fill up Asia and the Mediterranean and other places like that. Genesis, in that verse 7, we saw Havilah, Sabta, and Sabteca. That's Arabia, okay? Rama also settled in Arabia, but is especially mentioned as the father of Sheba and Dedan. He is the only one of the sons of Cush whose own sons' names are listed. Why? We don't know. Presumably, in their day, they were rocking dudes. Who knows? Maybe they were rock stars. I have no idea. Okay, but Sheba and Dedan were unusually well known in the area. There's even writings in history that talk about them, but nobody knows any facts about them. But we do know that later, two of Abraham's grandsons through Keturah were named after them. So they were that kind of hopping in that ancient times. Okay, now let's look at verses 8 through 14. Cush fathered Nimrod. All right. You know, if you had any older people in your life that would call you a Nimrod, you know, or if you've ever grown up in the country and you've been called a Nimrod, this is somebody that is completely rebellious, hard-headed. Okay? And I know some of you are Nimrods. You're just natural Nimrods. Believe me. My dad called me Nimrod a number of times. So, but Cush, he bothered Nimrod. And the word Nimrod literally means let us rebel. Okay? All right. So Cush fathered Nimrod. Who was Cush the son of? Ham. Okay? So Cush was the son of Ham. And do you remember the last chapter we were in? What was Ham told? You're going to be the servants of your brothers. So what does Cush do? What does Ham do? We ain't going to be nobody's servants, man. Ain't nobody making us servants. Let's train Nimrod to take over everything. Cush fathered Nimrod. He was the first on earth to be a mighty man. And basically, some of your translations may say he began to be a mighty man on the earth. So basically, he was the first man's man. He was the first, you know, he was the very first Chuck Norris, right? He's the guy that kills the beasts. He's the man that slays the dragons. He's the one, all the animals that are screaming out there at night and everybody's freaking out. He's like, I'm going to take care of it, yo. And he goes out there and he kills it. And he comes back with it, hangs it on a door and says, yeah, I'm Nimrod, dig it, right? That's basically what he's doing. The Jerusalem Targum says, he was powerful in hunting and wickedness before the Lord. Because you begin to read in verse 9, he says he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Now, you could read he was a mighty hunter against the Lord. And when he says he was a mighty hunter, it doesn't say what he's hunting. Okay? It does not say what he is hunting. The beginning of his kingdom, so he's the first person to have a kingdom. All right? The beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech or Uruk, Akkad, and Calneh in the land of Shinar. From that land, so he builds this, you know, this multiple city metropolitan area, and then he does another one. From that land, he went into Assyria. So he went and took over Assyria. Okay? So from that land, he went into Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth-Ur, Calah, and Resen between Nineveh and Calah. That is the great city. That was a metropolitan area that had thousands of people in it. And then verse 13 takes us into Egypt fathered Ludim, Anunim, Lehabim, Naphthamim, Parthamim, and Calcium, and, you know, on and on and on. But it points out here in the verse from whom the Philistines came, and Kephthorim, okay? But, looking at Nimrod, going back to Nimrod, looking at him, he was a hunter, the Jerusalem Targum says. And the Jerusalem Targum was a book that was written by, it was basically kind of like mythological history. It was like kind of traditional history of the Jews. And basically the rabbis would look at this verse and they would use this to help them to understand it. Understand that what I'm reading to you here is, it's like a commentary. And they said, he was a hunter of the sons of men, and he said to them, depart from the judgment of the Lord and adhere to the judgment of Nimrod. Therefore it is said, as Nimrod the strong one, strong in hunting and wickedness before the Lord. So basically, he was this man's man, and eventually he would be worshipped as a deity. Okay? So he was called Marduk by the Ninevites. And you can actually read, if you've ever been in school and you had to read the stories of Gilgamesh, anybody have to do that? Right. So, and Gilgamesh worshipped Marduk, and if you know, Gilgamesh survived a flood with a minimal number of his family. Okay? So we have, again, that flood story that goes through these different nationalities and these different nations, and it's almost like it really happened, which we see it did. He was mighty, though, and he was mighty against the Lord. Nineveh was roughly 200 miles north of Babylon and later was the capital of the Assyrian Empire. Rehoboth and Resen have not been definitely identified. They haven't found those cities. Archaeologists haven't found them. But, however, Calah has, and it has been excavated, and it is on the Tigris about 20 miles south of Nineveh. So that gives you an idea that here was this city, and 20 miles away from it was another city that was considered to be a part of it, and it's like Houston, Dallas, Austin. They're sucking up all the small cities around them and becoming this big metropolitan area, and that's how Nineveh was rolling. It was a huge complex of cities that was called a great city. The Assyrian legends speak of Ninus as the founder of Nineveh, and it is a form of the word Nimrod. And that's in their own writings. Okay? And these, as well as others, and some of the places that Abraham comes from, it's incredible because the things they find there are things that you and I experience from daily life. They have doctor's records for people. They have found in the city that in Ur, where Abraham comes from, they have found dental records. You know, I removed so-and-so's tooth, has rotten ones, must be repaired, you know, that kind of thing, right? Yeah. You know, got in a fight with Jim but they find all these things, and it's that connection for you to understand that these were real people. And they really experience these things. But folks, you know, when all these things happen, all these people are still in one place. And we're going to kind of get into that here in just a minute. Verses 15 through 20. Canaan fathered Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites, and the Girgashites, the Hivites, the Arkites, the Sinites, the Arvadites, the Zimmerites, and the Hamathites. And, afterwards, the clans of the Canaanites dispersed. And the territory of the Canaanites extended from Sidon, the direction of Gerar, as far as Gaza, and the direction of Sodom, Gomorrah, Adma, and Zeboim. And you guys recognize Sodom and Gomorrah from the stories that we've read about Lot going in there. I had a map for you guys, but I didn't get it to Michael in time, so I'm sorry. You know, normally we'd have a map up there and kind of show you where these are because it's that visual that you can get. But these are the sons of Ham by their clans, their languages, their lands, and their nations. And remember, as we're talking about this, at one point in time, every single one of these nations spoke one language. One. And all lived in the same area. And there was no nation. They were simply bros, right? That was it. So Canaan was prolific. He had 11 sons and an unknown number of girls. And looking at that and seeing all those ones that were listed of the Canaanites, again, as I told you, you need to go and look at the history just of all these names. And you can see history moving across a map when this happens. Again, the Bible speaks of all these nationalities and all this past in terms of how it deals with redemption in the history and what God is doing in us. So I refer you to Dr. Morris again from the Genesis record. Look at verse 21 through 32 with me, if you would. To Shem also, finally we get to Shem, he gets to himself. To Shem also, the father of all the children of Eber, and the elder brother of Japheth, children were born. The sons of Shem were Elam, Ashur, Arpachshad, Lud, and Aram. The sons of Aram were Uz, Hol, Gather, and Mash. Mash. I don't know, that just seems like a weird name to me. Arpachshad fathered, that's not an unweird one, but Arpachshad fathered Shelah, and Shelah fathered Eber. To Eber were born two sons. The name of the one was Peleg. And for some reason, he goes off and he says, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. Joktan fathered Almadad, Shelpha, Hazvermeth, Jera, Hadaram, Uzal, Dikla, Obal, Abimael, Sheba, Ophir, Havilah, and Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan. The territory in which they live extended from Mesha in the direction of Sephar to the hill country of the east. These are the sons of Shem by their clans, by their languages, their lands, and their nations. These are the clans of the sons of Noah according to their genealogies and their nations. And from these nations spread abroad on the earth after the flood. Basically, they're saying, wherever you came from, this is where it started. And Shem is identified as the father of the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth, the elder. In the day and place in which it was written, the children of Eber were like well known, okay, presumably, because it's a time that's used. And from the word Eber, we get the word Hebrew. So Eber was the first Hebrew. So Shem is the father of the Hebrews, and eventually his descendant would be Abraham, or Abram, as we're going to meet him at first. And as we begin to see these things like Elam, who is mentioned, originator of Mesopotamia, and they eventually join Persia. Ashur is Assyria. Lud is the Lydians. Aram means Arameans. Okay? And Aram, that Arameans, is also where we get the word Aramaic from. And Aramaic became the first common language. And in the time of Christ, every Hebrew knew Hebrew, and he knew Aramaic, and most of them also spoke and understood Koine Greek. I can barely do English, man. I don't think I'd do well back then, okay? Because think about that. Most of these people had to be able to speak in multiple different languages. Aramaic was very common everywhere. And so, you know, we see how even though God had split everything up, after a period of time, he begins to mesh everything back together, but in his own way and in his own time. Peleg means division. Some people think because, you know, and it literally stops and tells you there, when he talks about it here, and he says Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. There's two theories to that. One is Peleg was born when we're going to read chapter 11. So that's what some people think. And there's some things that could point at it that could say, yeah, that's possible, that's completely possible. But some people think that that's also when, because we talked about in the flood that that was probably when the cataclysm of the earth and that one giant landmass that there was split apart. But at this time, we think that there was still all the land bridges and everything, and most geologists agree that there used to be land bridges going between all the different continents. So some teach that this is when the continents drifted even further, and that's when Peleg was born, and that's why they made such a big deal of dividing, because it divided the continents even more. But the timing for Peleg could be within what we're about to read. Kind of looking at it here, guys, we just looked at 70 nations. We just read off 70 nations, 70 nationalities. Understanding that each of them came from that one brother, and we talked about that. There's only one race, that is the human race, no matter what color, no matter what nationality, no matter who you are, we all come from one source, from one wellspring, from this one place. 70 nations are mentioned here. And all throughout the scriptures, 70 appears over and over again in the Bible. Later on, when they would leave Canaan, when everybody was starving, and everybody would leave Canaan to go to Egypt, 70 went. Okay? In Genesis 46:27, all throughout the scriptures, in Daniel and in some of the Psalms, we see 70 weeks of years over and over again. Do you remember when we saw the Sanhedrin in the days of Jesus? How many Sanhedrin were there? Yeah, good guess. Okay, all right. They were called the 70 elders. Over and over again, we see this number 70 coming up. And we're going to go into that, but not tonight. Because now we're going into Genesis chapter 11. And as we read this, I want you to understand, in that first part of Genesis, what we see in chapter 10 and in chapter 9 and 10 is we see a 533% increase in the population with all the sons that Shem, Ham, and Japheth have. Okay, so you're talking about a 533% increase. And imagine if you have, and he said, go out, be fruitful, and multiply. Oh, they're poor wives, right? Okay, because, they're under the curse now. And everybody's having, Canaan had 11 sons. That's just sons. That's not including daughters. Think, if he had just as many daughters, that's 22 kids, right? That's a lot. But imagine every generation is doing this. Even if you only had an 8% increase from that first generation, with just an 8% increase, of each generation after that first one, you're talking that the time that we're about to read, there could have been as many as 9,000 people in this one city that we're about to look at. 9,000 people after the flood. And it's about 100 years after the flood that we're looking at right now. Isn't that crazy? By the time of the dispersion, if there was a constant 500% increase, you could be looking at 300 million people. So when all those nations went out, 300 million people could spread out when we see this happening. Okay? So this is crazy. And you begin to understand how history could have populated itself so fast if everybody was, you know, going crazy and saying, be fruitful and multiply. It's what we're supposed to do, you know, and we're doing it. You know, there was no TV, so, you know, it's what they did. All right? And so they're having all these babies, they're doing all this stuff, and then we see in Genesis chapter 11, Satan still working. Now, the whole earth, verse 1, had one language in the same words. And as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And we saw, and we know who was doing that. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. All right, so they're not just making mud bricks and letting them dry in the sun. These guys, they're baking them. They have this technology already. They understand this. And they had brick for stone and bitumen. Some of yours might read slime, okay? But it's bitumen for mortar. And I was talking with somebody, and they said that the fact that there was bitumen for mortar, that who was it that was telling me about that? And they said that the fact that there was bitumen for mortar, that there was some investors in, who was it? Was it the Rockefellers? It was some of those, they were telling me that when the Rockefellers read that, they went and they invested in Arabia for oil, because where there's bitumen, there's oil. So they saw this and they went and invested heavily in it, and of course became billionaires in the 1930s and 40s. But, you know, they used bitumen for mortar. So, and they actually baked it into the bricks as well. So they had, even at this ancient time, they had these buildings that could be built incredibly high. And some, like I said, have been found even today. And they said, come, in verse 4. So get that now. He says, come. Now, some of your translations may say something different, but note that call. That come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. So basically, this is that, you know, that rebellion, that it's all about us. We are what's important here. We've got to come together as one world, as one government. And we're going to have one ruler. So, again, you begin to see Satan working in this, because the Lord came down to see the city in verse 5. And the tower which the children of man had built. And this same ziggurat, and the ziggurat, which was popular at this time, and what was happening, the ziggurat is completely designed to worship the skies, to worship the earth. And we see the exact same pyramid scheme in Egypt. We see the exact same pyramid scheme in South America. You know, and again, the TV shows we have today will try and convince you that it's aliens that did this. You understand the aliens came down and taught. It couldn't be exactly what we see happening in Genesis right here. It, God forbid, right, that it's these people who learned how to do it at this particular time and learned how to make these pyramids, and then they're separated and dispersed all over the earth, and so they build them everywhere they go because it's what they remember. Their language completely destroyed from what it was, but their memories and minds still working in that place, and of course still self-serving. So the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built, and the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do, and nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. And this is one of the clarion calls of the one world government as well. For you to join as one to do these things means mankind cannot be stopped. We can achieve anything. Isn't that kind of what we're after? We can do it, you and I together. And there's a good and there's a bad call to that. There's a beautiful thing to that. And then there's this, when we begin to vaunt man and begin to worship him and what he does. And that's what these ziggurats are all about. Or ziggurats, or however you want to pronounce it. It's all about the worship of creation. You know, even in my mind, and if you read Romans 1, 18 through 32, it will talk about what happens when man begins to worship the creation. You have to understand, that's what atheism is. Atheism is not a lack of belief. That's what they've tried to come up with as a philosophy. Atheism is about worshiping creation, is about vaunting man as the ultimate. It is making man the center of things. There's no good, there's no bad, it's whatever you want to do. And that's what God is looking out for here, because he remembers what he had to do. He wiped out billions because of the exact thing that these guys are already beginning to do. So, you know, in that first verse that we read, in verse 4, it says, come, let us build ourselves a city. So now here in verse 7, God says, come, let us go down there and confuse their language so that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of the earth. And they left off building the city. They gave up, man. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of the earth. So imagine if you go... And just, you know, for a thought, you've been working on the ziggurat. It's beautiful, man. You're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be standing in the clouds one day on that. That's so cool. And you go home and you have dinner with your family and you meet with all your kinfolk and you're doing all these things and you're partying and everything's great. And then the next day you wake up and you don't understand your wife and you don't understand your kids. You understand a few people here and there, but you have no idea what anybody else is saying. You can't even read the writing anymore, you know. You read the Daily Slate, right? You know, that bedrock thing that everybody got. And you read, and you're like, I don't understand it anymore. I don't comprehend this. You know, and there are some languages that many people find almost impossible to learn, especially some of the ancient languages. We still can't decipher some of them. It's crazy. And God does it in a moment. This is a miracle. We might call it a curse, but it's a miracle because with it, he foiled the plans of the devil again, all for the purpose of saving you. Isn't that awesome? He had these 70 nations go out because he was going to put his son to die for you. And he had to do this to secure it and make it happen for you. Isn't that awesome? And we read it and we understand how sin destroys, how sin takes things down. And the worship of creation is the root of that. As a matter of fact, Babylon, Babel, 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 and that's where the word comes from because that's what it sounded like. You'd hear somebody and it'd be blah, 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 you know, don't you ever do that to somebody? Blah, 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 blah. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you can actually go back and forth with that. I actually did that because, you know, again, I was in the Navy and I was in Europe and all that good stuff. And I would fake it. I would fake languages just to watch people go, you know, and they kind of do that keep going thing, see if I can understand you. And I was not a good person anyway. And I would pretend I was pretend I was English and Australian and used to do really good accents occasionally. Yeah. So, but you begin to look at this and you see Babel and you see the origins here of basically every other religion that's not Christian and Jewish. And I know that can seem very limiting, but in Revelation 17:5, Babylon was called the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And here you have Babel, the actual beginning of civilization. And the first thing they do is worship anything but God. That's the nature of men. It is our very nature. You know, we read in earlier in Genesis that, man's whole desire from his youth was to do evil. That was it. Most of us, that's the first thing we slip to. That's our default. And to overcome it, we can't. We need Christ. And here we see the origins and the same lie the devil has told since the beginning. It is all a lie. And this idolatry that we lift up is birthed here in Babylon. Now, we see a lot of people, and a lot of times we don't get and understand that why all these brothers and sisters were getting married and cousins and first cousins and all this good stuff. The Earth's population was relatively young, and there had been a minimal amount at this point in time of environmental radiation. Remember, we talked about that call, that protective layer that covered the Earth and prevented much of the radiation from getting through. So at this time, there's no genetic danger from inbreeding. That would actually come later in Leviticus 18:6-14. So, but mutations and everything were beginning to slip in. And as we begin to read in verse 14, we begin to see suddenly at one point in time, and it's after Peleg, that the ages drop drastically. And, you know, we believe it's because of that division that happened. It's either the division that happened because when God said, poof, everybody go, and he dispersed everyone, and that could be, you know, thought of as division. So when that happened, okay, then he could have, you know, that when everything separated like that, you suddenly didn't have a city of 10,000 people. Suddenly you were just a few hundred, maybe 1,000 or so. And then you had to survive on your own. Everybody was sent out because it was literally driving them crazy at this time. They had to get away from each other. They knew this was from God, and they obeyed when he said, go fill and go multiply and fill the earth. So they listened. They finally did what they were told. And then again, as soon as they got out, they changed it. But if you look at these ages, these are the generations of Shem. When Shem was 100 years old, he fathered Arpachshad 2 years after the flood, and Shem lived after he fathered Arpachshad 500 years. And then you just keep reading. Arpachshad was 35, and then he fathered Shelah 403 years, and he had other sons and daughters. And then Shelah was 30 when he had his first. You know, so they're living to 400, and they're starting to have children at the age of 30. The generations that they could continue to have. You know, a lot of us, we think, well, man, you couldn't have that many people at that time. But remember, these guys were 300, 400 years old and still popping out kids, right? So, but then you begin to see things starting to change. And Eber lived 34 years, fathered Peleg. And Eber lived after he fathered Peleg 430 years, had other sons and daughters. When Peleg lived 30 years, he fathered Reu. And Peleg lived after he fathered Reu 209 years. Reu fathered Serug, and at 207 years had other sons and daughters. The ages are dramatically changing now. After Peleg, they've dramatically gone down. Nahor was 200. And had other sons and daughters. Nahor lived after he fathered Terah 119 years and had other sons and daughters. Sarag lived till he fathered Nahor 200 years, so he was 200 years old. Nahor was 119. Terah lived 70 years and fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And then it switches to the generations of Terah. Terah was the son of Nahor. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran fathered Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his kindred in Ur of the Chaldeans. So now we're getting introduced to Abraham, or Abram. And Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah. So remember, Nahor is Abram's dad, right? No, Terah is Abram's dad. Okay. Nahor is his uncle. Milcah and the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Now Sarai was barren. She had no child. So Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his sons, Abraham's wife, and they went forth together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, so this is not the son, but this is a city called Haran. When they came to Haran, they settled there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, most people think that, and the Jews actually teach, and we'll look at a detailed timeline later. But this detailed timeline that you give, you're looking at about 222 years after the dispersion. So you've got 222 years here. The nations are crocking, and everything's going. In that 222 years, there's been an ice age. At this particular point in time, Egypt is a lush garden. There's rain all over the place. The Nile Valley is rich and luscious, but it's not mentioned in the Bible. Because the Bible is concerned about God's plan for humanity's spirits, because what we're experiencing here, as we've talked about this past Sunday, is only a part of eternity. And it's an eternity that you're going to have to decide where you are going to live. Terah is called with Abram, Nahor, and Haran to go out of Ur of the Chaldeans, to go and worship and follow God. But yet, these and they were pagans when they were called. We see it from the New Testament and from the Old Testament that Terah actually made idols. That's what he did for a living. He crafted idols and sold them to people or traded with them. Abram was also an idol worshiper. It says so. Peter actually says that. Stephen, before he was martyred in the book of Acts, actually says that, hey, Abram was an idol worshiper, him and his father, until they were called by God. Remember, each one of you was too. And the idol you worshipped was yourself and your own flesh until you were called. And then when you heard and you answered, and it was that something different. But understand, in 1 Corinthians 9:27. It says, I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. Terah was disqualified and ended up dying, not going into Canaan and seeing what God had in mind for them. Does it mean that he stopped worshiping God? No, but he definitely stopped following that call. And understand that, guys, if God's called you into something, if God's called you into that something special, don't disobey the call. Don't. It might mean giving up what you consider to be something great or something important or something eternal, but we're talking about eternity here. We're talking about you being what some people call castaways, where they are living completely for their flesh and for the world, and God is on the sidelines. I actually went into a hospital room, and I spoke to this young man, probably late 20s. And he almost lost his foot. And we began to talk about God. And he literally said, oh yeah, I believe in Jesus Christ, but I don't have time for him right now. I've got to worry about my foot, my job, my wife. And not my wife. Sorry, let me rephrase that. My baby mama. That's what he literally said. I got to worry about my foot, my job, my baby mama, and my baby. But yet claimed to be a follower of Jesus Christ, whose life reflected nothing of it. And you can imagine it being like Terah, who left everything. Left his home, left his family, left everything that he knew to go with Abram and they got stuck in Haran until someone died, and then they left. Because in chapter 12, verse 1, the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. So next time we meet, we'll go into Genesis chapter 12 and hopefully 13. But understand, guys, God wants to use you, and God will call you, and he will gift you. He does not call you without a gifting. He does not call you without a plan and a purpose. But as I was talking with Michael tonight, and we were talking about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob wrestling with the angel, sometimes it's a wrestling match. Jacob was called Israel after he prevailed. You understand? It says that he struggled with man and with God and prevailed. Knocked his hip out of joint, and he held on. You know, I imagine him being like Kevin James, right? You know, the comedian, just kind of holding on, screaming, no! You know, and this angel just going, dude, let go. I got things. Finally, he just said, you will be called Israel because you struggled and you prevailed. And sometimes God calls you into something. God called Jacob into all this, and God calls you into it, and it's a wrestling match. It's a fight. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you're like, this cannot be God. No, my friends. God did not call you to a life of luxury and pampered goodness. He called you into a battle because this life is so temporary. And sometimes, there's going to be down moments, yeah. You're going to get some R&R. He's got that for each and every one of us, that rest and recuperation for you non-military folks. Okay? And he's got it in mind for you, and he has those moments of rest. But remember, you're supposed to be wearing the full armor of God. You know, you don't give people armor who are going to be pushing paper, right? You don't give a sword to a guy that's going to be sweeping streets. You give it to a warrior, to a soldier, to someone that's going to be going out and doing battle for his name. And that's what each and every one of you has been given and gifted. He didn't say some of you. He said all of you. So if you call on the name of Christ, realize you've been called to go out of your home and out of the Ur of the Chaldees and to go out and do things for him. Where it is, that's between you and him. I ain't got nothing to do with that. Except for the fact that you and I will look together at these scriptures and see what God has to tell to us. And understand, we're family. You can't get rid of me, okay? And I can't get rid of you. It doesn't mean that I have to like you. But I do have to love you. And ditto, back at you, right? You don't have to like me. We don't have to be buds and pals and bosom buddies and BFFs. But we have to remember that we're supposed to be soldiers, and we're supposed to be shoulder to shoulder in this battle, doing this fight, working with each other towards a common goal, not of a one world order, but of a one Lord order. This one Lord that each and every one of us wants to place before us. That's our goal. He is our testimony. Your testimony, understand that, is not that you were delivered from drugs. It is not that you were delivered from alcohol. It is not that I was delivered from pornography. Our testimony is Jesus Christ and him crucified. That is your testimony. That is the power of the blood. And that is the thing that you can hold on to. Witness him. And when you witness him and you put him into power in your life, then you're going to and understand the reality of what we just been through here. Awesome reality of all of this history that even the world goes, yeah, that's right. Wow, who'd have thought that was in the Bible? We know it and we see the reality of it. Understand this in your lives. You guys, this is not happening in the dark. This is not a myth that we are following. This is something that happened in this dimension, in this reality, in the dimension of time even. This is real. and people are going to really go to hell. And that's why we have to be serious about this. And it's all on you. So let's pray. Father, we come to you and we thank you so much just for the gift that you've given us. We thank you, Father, for this word that testifies and tells us of your plan for us, of your plan to bless, of your plan to move upon our lives. It is you that gives us the glory. Your glory lights upon us. And Father, let us shine. Let us reflect you. Let us be lights in this dark, dark earth, because we see from the beginning of time the enemy has been after us, has been after your word, has been trying to thwart your plan. But Lord, you saw it through. And on that cross, Jesus said, "It is finished." So Father, let us hold on to that testimony of the Lamb, that one given to us before the beginning of time. And we thank you, Lord, that we can see this strand weaving its way through time to where we are right now. And I thank you for your salvation that you give freely to any that would believe, Lord. And if there's any here who would believe, who are unsure, Lord, I pray you move upon their hearts tonight, that they would seek you and find you out, that they would not hear the reality of this and not come after you, wanting to be a part of this new family that you have created, where you've taken what was dispersed and divided and made it one again in Jesus Christ. And we lift it to you this evening in Jesus' name. Amen.